You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe. It simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. You say Ashe? We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great week last week and an even better weekend, and I hope this week will be equally as well or even better. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, will do, and I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it won't be accommodating for you to do it, you're going to get it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And we appreciate you for your perseverance, your tenacity, and your willingness to get the job done. Ashe. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world, wherever you may be. And if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Click on podcasts, and the first one up is African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. We appreciate him. I'm glad to be back. I was in Venezuela at the conference on imperialism, anti-imperialism. And all I can say is I'll tell you about the whole thing in a minute, but let me get through these announcements and all the other stuff. And also, too, I will make a comment on the tragic death of Kobe Bean Bryant and his daughter, Gianna Maria Gigi Bryant. Man. African Perspectives, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, Monday evening, it is Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 with Brother Wahad. Right after that is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And after that is Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy. On Thursdays, from 7 to 8. And then on Friday, if it's Friday, and it is. Wait, let me first backtrack. I'm going to try to do this in an order here. Right after my program on Friday is Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy Lee. And I understand the program went well this past Friday. And I'm very proud of my sister. She's going to do a great job, Sister Marcy Lee. Esoteric Review. And then Friday evening at 8 p.m., if it's Friday evening and it's 8 p.m., you know it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., right, you're right, you're right. It's not me. It is Sister POC and her program once again, Revive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening. Once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m., from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. 9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. You can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at We Buy Black. Go online and check out all the products that are produced by us. But if you are in the Atlanta area and you want to pick up those products immediately, you can go to the Greenbrier Mall right off of Georgia Highway 166 and pick up those products right at the kiosk they had right there in the Greenbrier Mall. We Buy Black. African for the Africans. AfricanForTheAfricans.org. Check out Brother Monty Taihemba. He has a trip coming up in April to Senegal and Gambia. That is April 3rd through the 13th. It is going to cost $3,300. $3,300. Man, it's great. And then the Ghana African Repatriation Investment Tour, May 25th through June 5th. And that's going to be $3,700. And then South African Roots and Cultural Tour, November 20th through the 30th of this year. That is also going to be $3,700. And then you're going to finish it off once again in December, December 22nd through January 3rd of 2021. And that is going back to Ghana. So he has two Ghana trips, a South African trip, and a trip to Gambia, Senegal and Gambia. And you can check out all of that. Go online to AfricaForTheAfricans.org or give Brother Bamani a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. He has been doing it for a decade, well over 10 years, brothers and sisters. Please go online. If you want to see photos of his tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I. If you want to see YouTube videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani 2007. Also, too, Rinoco Rashidi, my good brother, Dr. Rinoco, go to his website, drrinoco.com. He has a trip that is ending in a few days in Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. And that trip is ending real soon, February 4th. They will be returning, so there, as we speak, beautiful pictures. Also, too, the trip to Uganda and Rwanda, October 15th through the 16th. Uganda and Rwanda. When you go on the page, just some outstanding photos of Uganda and Rwanda. And that's October 5th through the 16th. And that trip is going to be $4,200. But just outstanding accommodations. If you look at all that is being offered, just a beautiful trip. That's right. Brother Oshi is trying to get you to at least visit the motherland. At least visit. You ain't got to be like me and want to move there. In fact, I've got so much opposition in my family. Don't do that. Just go visit. I hear you. Just visit. Okay. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End here in Atlanta. And they have all the things that you need. They got furniture. They got clothing. They got artwork. They got figurines. They got it all. They got the red, black, and green shoes and the guy's shoes. Man, I swear. And they also have an African Holocaust Museum. The Shrine is open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7 and on Sunday from 1 to 3. And give the Shrine a call at 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. And, of course, they have a class every Saturday, the African History class of Know Thyself, open, free and open to the public every Saturday, 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Outstanding multimedia presentation. And of course, if you can't make that, but you like the multimedia presentation, you can get it. That's right. The multimedia library has 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. And so go to the Shrine and check that out. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, the Medu Bookstore, located right by the kiosk
of We Buy Black. So if you are at We Buy Black, the Meadow Bookstore is right there. You can pick up books, postcards, greeting cards, all the things that you need. And give them a call at 404-346-3263 and find out if they have the book that you want. And if they don't, they'll get it for you. Believe me, they will. The same thing is true with the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Gazimde Ajamu, and the number to call for them. And they also have the red, black, and green shoes at the Black Dot and T-shirts and all kind of good stuff, is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. That's right. This Saturday coming up, let me get that for us right here. I want to make sure that we announce today, Wednesday, and Friday. Clearly, I'm trying to find it, y'all. Y'all just bear with the brother. That's right. I'm getting back, and so I'm trying to get back in the swing. You know, I'm getting back. So let me just do this. Yeah, because I'm trying to, here we go, right here. And it is working on our relationships in Revolutionary Nation Building Work. And we have Relationships 101 for Brothers Only. And that lecture will be given by Baba Baruti. And it starts at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. this Saturday, the 1st. A workshop focusing on preparing for a relationship, selecting a compliment, sustaining a relationship, dating and marriage. Okay, and then the second half is Relationships 101 for Sisters Only. And that workshop will be given by Yabaruti. And that starts at 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Also at the Akabin Institute. And the preparing, same thing, you know, sustaining relationships. And we need that because we're trying to build a nation. So check that out. It is this Saturday. Contact Sister Ya at 404-753-7237, 404-753-7237, because this might be online, okay? Or you can email Sister Ya at yabaruti@gmail, yaabaruti@gmail.com. Akabin Institute, where Brother Baruti and Sister Ya are educating our young warriors, and of course they need help. They receive no money outside of those brothers and sisters and any donations. That's why I always support them. So Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. I repeat, make check or money order out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. Or if you want to use Cash App or PayPal, the dollar sign YAA, the letter M, Baruti, M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your contributions. Hopefully you can afford to make them monthly. That would be great. That would be a great help, whatever that amount is. Sanjay-Haiti.org, Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sister Gabrielle Aurelia. Sister Gabby is once again doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, where she is working with our young people. Beautiful school they have there. You see the children and dealing with health care and dealing with developing ways to grow food and so forth. I mean, it's an outstanding program. Definitely deserves to be supported. Black Talk Radio Network Project and Brother Scotty Reed is ongoing. The BlackTalkRadioNetwork.org. We're on Black Talk, excuse me, the BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We're on Black Talk Radio Network, so we want to support that effort with Brother Scotty Reed. Go to BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. You don't even have to go to the project. If you don't want to, you can do that. But all you do is scroll down. You'll see the donation button there and make your donation. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, every Thursday night, the Thursday night broadcast of Us Lifting Us at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us lifting us. The Economic Development Cooperative for our people. The Enye Sasim, that's right, I've been gone a while, so I want to make sure I get some of these beautiful gems in. The Enye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. January 22nd. I'm sorry.
This call is being recorded.
Lost my place. January 22nd. How did the NYA say so?
They had a fracture, broken bones, surgery, or other serious injury. Call 1-800-LAW.
The white man regards the universe as a gigantic machine hurtling through time and space to its final destination. Individuals in it are but tiny organisms with private lives that lead to private deaths. Personal power, success, and fame are the absolute measure of values, the things to live for. Anton Limbe. Africans have no fear of death. That is, has the end of things. We understand ourselves as spirit, and spirit has life and death. We understand it is in a transition to the higher state of being. We revere aging, not only because the wisdom that naturally accompanies it, but also because, like infants who have just left the spirit world, elders who are approaching it closer to it, thus becoming more psychologically integrated with it. Circularity is the basis of our thinking, circular. Physical death does not end life. We move on to another realm, to another spiritual form, if you will, and return again through the acts of procreation as a human being. Affirm, I am fully integrated in the life cycle. Affirm, I am fully integrated in life cycle. January 23rd. Everything ignorable among black people can be traced back to white supremacy. In the way that I would say that, everything ignorant among American African people can be traced back to European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. Brother Clarence Mumford. Africans raised in European culture are byproducts of that culture. That culture is a society are responsible for their victims' male creation. And in this male creation, in a direct result of their insatiability, need to exploit and abuse others, at the same time remaining blameless. In this racist contest of domination and oppression, the mind that fabricated Caucasian extremism defined and is responsible for virtually everything good and bad that comes to African people. And because this psychopathic racist personality interprets African people as enemy, competition, and ironically superior, the destructive force, did you catch that? And because this psychopathic racist personality interprets African people as enemy, competition, and ironically superior, the destructive forces unleashed on us are specifically their doing. The climate of racist hierarchy established in European society and predatory character of the European cultural personality make it only natural for the ignorant to be perpetrated against and thereby concentrated among African people. From this, we are led two possible logical conclusions. When you have truly rigorously dissected and analyzed the historical behavior of a consciousless, blood-sucking parasite and have come to a logical scientific conclusion that the parasite absolutely cannot live without killing its victims. You also must conclude that is, if you want its victims to live for more than just to procreate for victims, that you want this victim to live for more than just to procreate more victims for the parasite, that the parasite must be removed from contact if possible, or existence when necessary. Affirm, I know the source of all ignorance among our people. I know the source of all ignorance among our people. January 24th. Each generation must assume the responsibility of securing manhood, their womanhood, their definitions of being on earth, and in the final analysis is nationhood. I repeat, each generation must assume the responsibility of securing their manhood, their womanhood, the definition of their being on earth, that is in the final analysis, is nationhood. Dr. John Henry Clark. Freedom, a self-determining dynamic power, is a permanent responsibility. It requires constant care and attention. It must be guarded for the entirety of its existence. This fact is what makes our quest to ensure our liberation endless. It will never stop except we stop. And if we stop, our liberation will be lost, possibly forever. There is nothing in the universe which says a people who become willfully enslaved cannot remain so until they are genocidally removed from existence. I repeat, there is nothing in the universe which says a people who become willfully enslaved cannot remain so until they are genocidally removed from existence. I know many of our people wish for divine intervention, and we do nothing, just praying for that. Brothers and sisters, we got to work. And one generation cannot guarantee its progeny its liberation. It can provide the wisdom and the means to gain or sustain liberation, but it cannot force a generation to want to be free through its own volition. An adult cannot be made to stand by his or her own parents. You got to stand for yourself. Affirm, I'm responsible for our freedom. That's right, brothers and sisters. We are responsible for our freedom. And we must assume that responsibility. January 26. A man who will not labor to gain his rights is a man who will not, if he had them, prize them and defend them. That's right. If you're not willing to labor, you won't defend it. Just give it up. A man who will not labor to gain his rights, who will not work hard, who will not fight, is a man who will not, if he had them, prize them and defend them. Frederick Douglass. People raise a diet of ease and unease access, purposefully socialized to reject the idea of independent thinking and actually working to produce for self, place little, if any, value or concern on their rights. They assume their inalienable permanence and approach them as casually as they do many things which have the misfortune of crossing their inconsiderate paths. People receive and expect to receive all they desire without any effort on their part, and even in spite of their every effort, not to mention, not to even earn them, place little long-term and even often immediate value on what they have received. The response of intolerance ingrates to personal gifts extend into all areas of life where discipline is not enforced. Even to that of respecting their own civil and human privileges. As African people have voluntarily moved to a sense of security in European hands, many of us has been ushered into a purely consuming and leisure mentality, all the while being systematically guided away from any aspirations for real effective power. Our enslavement, our captivity progress, now intensified by the process of emptying our souls of the strength of human character through removing the drive for and reason behind laboring to produce and maintain an autonomous state of being. Before the whip, the noose, and various other forms of institutionalized racism kept us in check, now we are suffocating under the weight of our own powerlessness. Decadent indulgence. Wow, that's deep, ain't it? Affirm, I work for African liberation. Affirm, I work for African liberation. Today, January 27th. The police agent who exercised torture in contradiction with the values of his group and the system he defends, Franz Fanon. Contrast a key to crafting an understanding of what we want to do, not want to be like. Therefore, there is a practical necessity in making obvious generalizations about what is and what is not African. For without generalizations, we only see different groups of people evading unreal similarities. Europeans do not want us to generalize because then we will know them as one people. If we think of them individually, they stay hidden. Let me say this right quick. This is very real. Because even many years ago when I was working at the fire department, I would talk about the generalness of how Caucasians treat us. And many Caucasians would come back later, I'm not like that. You know, we're only individuals. Because individualism is a European Caucasian desire. But collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must. If we think of them individually, they stay hidden as people, as a living, conscious, directed force against humanity. Warriors do not have time to sift between them, between us and them individually. It is enough to know the enemy's nature, the time to disentangle white lies with liberal half-truths and notions of multicultural reform of its white supremacist father is not on our side. The desired situation our people face requires simple, honest, inclusive, but comprehensive tools which will allow them to be more effectively do the nation-building work that they have been called actively engaged in. Generalizations best serve these intentions. Generalizations, when historically accurate, are statements that describe or characterize the vast majority of a member's group of people and give an accurate picture of the variations within a given group or population, while omitting extremes, which would confuse the truth. Affirm, I generalize with knowledge and knowing and conscious intent. I generalize with knowledge and knowing of conscious intent. And generally speaking, they ain't good. The Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Brothers and sisters, I'm glad to be back. I was in Venezuela. We have a call. I'm going to take this call before I talk about that in depth. Good afternoon. Oh, excuse me. We're still morning. Good morning, 646. Good morning.
Hey, Oshie, put me back on hold. Talk about the trip. All right. I'll catch you at the next hour. All right.
Peace. Thank you, Jay. My good brother, Demonia Quill, and I thank him, and I can't stop thanking him for inviting me to take this trip to Venezuela, to the World Conference on Anti-Imperialism. What's going on here? I tell you, I'm having computer problems. I had computer problems trying to get on. I'm having computer problems now. You know. Okay, that's correct. I can deal with that. The World Meeting Against Imperialism for Life, Sovereignty, and Peace. It was really a very, man, a very opening experience to see the world coming together to talk about what happens to their countries because of the racist policies of Western world. You know, how Europe and the United States and all the Western countries who have done what they have done and continue to do what they have done, even though many of these countries fight against it, some are more stronger than others to fight against it. Like, unfortunately, Bolivia was not. Bolivia was taken over in a regime change because of the United States. But, of course, Venezuela withstood the regime change. I'll talk about that in a moment. And but when I first got there, I got there and they were already in session, and I attended the conference on anti-imperialism. I wish I went to the one on sovereignty and had some discussion there, but regardless, I was in the mix, and I was so thankful to be in the mix. And then the next day we had a meeting of Africans and African descended brothers and sisters across the globe, and putting together what they called a kumbe, a statement of solidarity and commitment of what can be done with each country and those outside of our African countries to support what we are doing in our fight against imperialism and racism and sexism and all those things, man. Militarism, just like Dr. King said, that the three evils of Western society. I'm not just not America, but of Western society. You know, the three evils of militarism, capitalism, and racism. The three evils, and they're so entrenched that, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing that we can do to change that. We have to change our response to that. We can pray all we want. We can hope and wish all we want. But there's nothing that we can do to change them. We have to change us and how we respond to them. That's vitally important. That's necessary. You know? Yeah, it was to see people from all over the world, you know, and it was dynamic. It really was. And the unique and historic character of this meeting is that, unlike the previous ones, it will not be blind to the questions of racism and other problems faced specifically by Africans. African and indigenous people, especially First Nation people, as well as struggles as those for reparations. And, you know, I mentioned in our African group, because me being a staunch Pan-Africanist and nationalist, you know, I wanted us to just eliminate descendants because there's the confusion there. You know, just like ADOS, American descendants of slaves. American descendants. That's just on the surface of it sounds crazy. And of course, the movement itself is anti-Pan-Africanist, and it's very divisive. And I mentioned that in our group, and I consistently put forth the idea of one Africa. Because to me, if Africa was united, and even one of the sisters from Senegal, we were both talking about in the group that North Africa, if Africa was united, we would make North Africa say that either you are African or you are out. Ain't no sub-Saharan BS. Either you are African, the claim of the continent, either you are African or out. And if you are African, then you're not going to treat humanity the way that you are treating our brothers and sisters in Libya, castrating them, selling them into enslavement. You're not going to treat brothers and sisters the way you're treating in Mauritania, Morocco, Egypt, Algeria, one Africa. I will continue to push forth this. I mentioned the conference that's coming up in October, October 15th through the 18th, here in Atlanta, which is a prelude to the World Conference that will take place in Ghana next year. Because the people with that vision, the people with that vision, Kwame Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, and others, and many others, men and women, who understand it is not about Ghana or Senegal or Cameroon or South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho. It is about Africa, the continent. Because the European, long as he can keep you divided and try to make you think that your country is better than any other African country, it is an issue. It is an issue. And talking with my dear sister, Sister Asmira. Sister Asmira is a beautiful sister, beautiful woman from Milwaukee. She is a legislative assistant to Congresswoman Gwen Moore from Milwaukee. But beyond that, much more beyond that, she has done great international work. Great international work. In our conversation yesterday about Africans and American Africans, how the mindset is. When I talked to a brother from Azania, and we need to start using Azania, not South Africa. See, you know, if you listen to this program, if you listen to African Perspectives here with Brother Oshie, you know words have deep meaning. And we want to use the right words, the right verbiage, because those words put a picture into your mind. Because when I say South Africa, even though I may conjure up an image of Nelson Mandela, which of course now we all know was BS, him getting out. It was a deal made because Caucasians still run South Africa. And when I talk to the three brothers from South Africa, they admit, yes, they do. Same as Namibia. The Germans still run Namibia. It is only when there is a united front, a serious united front, will that cease? Will those divisions cease? So I said to him, I said, you know, they're talking about what happened in South Africa when the brothers and sisters were upset and that you had Ghanaians and Nigerians and Kenyans who were well-educated coming into Azania and getting jobs and so forth, that the brothers and sisters in South Africa felt they should have opportunity to have, and vamped on them. Some were killed. Well, you should not be going after them. You should be going after the system that failed to educate you properly to take advantage of jobs in your own country. And it's not xenophobia, because xenophobia is fear of people. There's other Africans. You see what I'm saying? Getting the wording right. How many, you know, and to me, the wording probably should be a fear or Afrophobia, fear of Africans, but that's even ridiculous. But they're afraid to challenge those who have put them in that position. I talked with brothers and sisters from Haiti, all around, man. It was just a fantastic. Many were represented. And not going to take a break today because my break music ain't ready. I still got to get that together. It was hard getting on the air today. So I'm going to continue to talk about the conference. And then I'm going to wrap up and talk about the tragic death of an NBA icon, Kobe Bryant. So one of the things that I was very pleased with in this trip was the Venezuelan people, just talking with them. Now, just like when I was in the airport, I flew from Atlanta to Panama. There's no direct flights into Venezuela because what America is trying to do to Venezuela. You know, one of the things in our discussion the night before we left, which was Friday evening, there was a group of us, mostly English speaking, or Americans, English speaking, because there was Canadians and other folks, and some Venezuelans, and what can we do? Of course, the whole project is about influencing public policy, bringing people together, working people together, you know, so they don't have their country taken over and dictated to, like what happened in Bolivia and many other places, much like what's happening in Brazil. I don't know if they see anybody in Brazil there, but man, you know what's happening in Brazil is ugly. And so they were talking about, you know, ending imperialism and attempts of regime change and, you know, sanctions. In fact, one of the main things that was brought out, that sanctions kill. When the United States puts sanctions, because, you can't put no sanctions on the states. They are self-contained. They are the dictator. They're the bully on the damn planet, and they have a biggest bully in the presidency. And I hope, you know, after what came out about the former secretary of, Bolton. And Bolton said, yeah, he said it. He said, as a condition, I'm going to put that, you want this money, I want you to investigate the Bidens. As a condition, doing us a favor. And let's see what happens then. I don't, you know, one way or the other, because our struggle will always continue. Whether he is impeached and kicked out of office, it doesn't matter. We lost so much even under Obama. So, but what they're saying is that these things hurt. Sanctions hurt. When you impose sanctions, maybe I can't get the medications that I need for me and my children and my family. I die. I can't get the foods and so forth. I die. And when there's regime change, and of course that regime is more authoritarian, more dictatorial, more one way or the other, I die. But one thing you also must understand in these countries, racism is a serious problem. What Europeans, Caucasians have done to this planet is a damn shame. There was no color confrontation 1,000 years ago. There was no color confrontation when Greeks, although what the Greeks did may lend itself to that movement, because what the Greeks did in their takeover of Kemet, they started painting some of the Medu Netcher looking like them. And I understand that to the victors goes the spoils. And so, you know, you're going to put the image there. But what the Greeks also did was speak correctly on who were the people of ancient Kemet. You could say the same thing about Rome. In the image of Europeans. And so that affects people all the time. When I was going to Venezuela, I pretty much spent a good time in the Panamanian airport. And I was talking to a sister from Jamaica who had visited Panama. And she was telling me how she's kind of observed some of that, you know. Same thing I observed talking with a sister from Puerto Rico who looked African, who was not treated as well because in her family, because she looked more African. It is a sickness. It is an affliction. What Europeans have done around the world, causing people to spend lots of money on nose jobs, getting rid of the melanin in their skin, bleaching creams, hair straightening. You know, I've seen Africans with some, I was going to say fucked. Oh, I did say it. I'm sorry, y'all. With some messed up wigs. Messed up hair pieces. And it's all over. I mean, when I was there, I saw Africans, you know, people with weave as opposed to natural hair. Oh, yeah, there were some because, you know, that was a more, I would say, conscious people there who are fighting against European aggression, European imperialism, European racism, sexism, capitalism, fighting against sanctions. Had a chance to view the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, a few times. The first time was a people's rally. And let me say this. The reason why Guaido, who was backed by the United States, because usually what happens is that those coups, those coup d'etats are successful because of the military and intelligence might of the United States. They were not successful in Venezuela. Believe me, they've been trying for a long time because of the strong leadership of Hugo Chavez. I admire Hugo Chavez. I thank Hugo Chavez. Hugo Chavez provided heating oil through Citgo. And now Citgo has turned because of pressure through Citgo. For people in Milwaukee, I remember. I know some people who were given heating oil for the long, hard winters in the northern part of the United States, in the Midwest, particularly in the Northeast. Hugo Chavez. And then Nicolas Maduro took over, and they're trying to get rid of him and put Guaido, who is European trained, American trained, because they're still reserved. One thing you must understand, dear brothers and sisters, when they attack some countries, they know why they're doing it. And the main reason why they're doing it is resources, not the people. They ain't doing no. They're dealing with resources. One person who I met, I'm very impressed with, and that's Brother Paul Pumphrey out of D.C. Also met my good brother, Kimon Freeman, also out of the D.C. area. Not too many American Africans were able to attend the conference, and not, in fact, a number of people were not able to attend because of the forces that prevented them from getting the itinerary and the clearances to travel. I was lucky because there were some others who were supposed to have attended from Atlanta that were not able to attend. So I was fortunate, and once again, I want to thank Brother Damani Aquil. I'm going to have him on the program and to talk about it, because he has been involved for a good number of years, you know. But Maduro addressed us. He acknowledged us. We were in the stands when they had the address to the people, because the reason why the United States was not able to put Guaido in that position, it was not because that Maduro still had the support of the military. No, he had the support of the Venezuelan people. He had the support of the Venezuelan people. That's why. Their revolution continues. And it was a pleasure to be there. No, yes, they have issues, but man, they work for the people. The people are not starving. The people are not, you know, some of the places you see, and because it's very hilly. I didn't get a chance to get around because I was, you know, why I was there is to attend that conference. I was not there in a little small amount of time to do sightseeing and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't get a chance to go all around Venezuela. But what I did see is that the people understand the Venezuelan revolution must continue. President Nicolas Maduro addresses World Anti-Imperialist Congress. This was that Friday, the last day, and in a park right across the street from the conference of where we were at. And ironically, there was a fountain there, and right behind him, man, it was a rainbow. You know, I took a picture of it. I don't know how well it came out. But on the final day of the World Anti-Imperialist Congress, January 24, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro spoke to the hundreds of international delegates from over 50 countries, with Syrian professor and a member of the Baha'i Party at his side. Maduro began with a story of a visit he had alongside Hugo Chavez to Syria when the thousands of Syrians surrounded his vehicle in Damascus and lifted the car in celebration of the brave anti-imperialist leader. Maduro followed this with a declaration of solidarity to the Syrians for surviving imperialist intervention. After a brief comment on the vicious brutality of the capitalist system, Maduro stated, "It is here that we are the vanguard of a model of socialism, of anti-imperialism that will transform the world for humanity." He followed with a quote in reference to the decline of U.S. imperialism. I hope so. Of Mao Zedong. Mao Zedong called U.S. imperialism a paper tiger, and that we will build the new world that is coming. Mentioning the recent massive demonstrations of millions of Iraqis in the streets of Baghdad, Maduro shamed the human rights organizations of the world for not caring about the lives of Iraqis for the least 17 years of U.S. imperial murder, terrorism, and bombing. All of my support to Iraq. All of my support to Iraq. All of Venezuela stands with Iraq, he said. Maduro, a former union bus driver, shared that the Washington Post recently asked him what the key was to surviving the Juan Guaido coup attempt. He responded, "Don't ask me. Ask the people who went into the streets to defend their revolution." He said the United States had spent tens of millions of dollars but could not break the spirit of the Venezuelan people in a revolutionary process. "I know the U.S. well. I used to drive a bus from Boston to New York, to Philadelphia, to D.C. I am not anti-American. I am anti-imperialist. We are anti-imperialism, anti-colonialism, anti-racism," Maduro expressed in a statement of solidarity to the working people of the U.S. The meeting finished with a surprise presentation from the Communist Party of Russia, who presented the Order of Lenin to President Maduro. "We all have Lenin in our hearts. This is a commitment, a revolutionary commitment to build socialism in the 21st century," as they shook hands. At the conclusion of the conference, the working groups of delegates presented their resolutions containing many statements of solidarity and their plans of international collaboration against imperialism. It is vitally important that we understand that we work with other groups. Now, me and my understanding and working with brothers and sisters here who are a part of the sovereignty movement. And we have to understand this, that we must get our act together first before we can help anybody. Because our minds are so Western, I would venture to say a lot of us are hesitant to help anybody, because in American society, the only person you're supposed to help is yourself. And so it reminds me, as I was mentioning Sister Asmira, we were talking about Africans who come to America, who go to school here in America, and because of their commitment and their family tradition of education and attaining whatever they attain, look down on American Africans. They look down on American Africans. They think they're better. than American Africans. The world, European, has done a job on our psyche. And we, as African people, must reclaim, recapture, and restore the African memory, the African spirit, so we can look at each other as brothers and sisters. So if you come into a country and you have the skills, you got the job, ain't no deal. But don't you look down on us. We're one people. If I come to your country, I'm not, just like when we came to Liberia, and she mentioned Liberia, we talked about it a lot and how messed up it is today because of what the European, in fact, what the European was breeding. He was breeding, if you want to use this term, high yellow, I ain't going to use that term because I really don't use the N word, but that's what he was breeding. And some of those people he bred to go over to Liberia, when they colonized Liberia, they colonized that portion of Africa to be a place to get rid of these Africans that they definitely show enough don't want. And they gave a beat down and humiliation to the Africans who were there. Look at that history. Read up on that history, even to this day. Even to this day. And then the Africans, Liberia, have a stronger president. Now, he is a former soccer player. They got rid of the sister because the brother who's the former soccer player is in tune with the needs of the people. The sister that was in there, she was in tune in the needs of the Western world, particularly the World Bank and the financial institution, International Monetary Fund. So the Congressional Black Caucus supported her. Those Negroes didn't support the brother. So you see, we have these problems. We have deep-seated, deep-rooted problems that we must eradicate. And what that calls for is eradication and change of our minds. And using, that's why words are so important. Using the right verbiage. So we can think in a way that is liberating. We can think in a way that is self-determination, that is self-determining. We can think in a way that is sovereign for African people. I believe that once African people are sovereign, the world will change. All people will change. And if that is the case, I'm quite sure, I know we will help that change come about wherever it is on the planet, to end imperialism, to end racism, sexism, colonialism, capitalism, to end it on the planet. And believe me, dear brothers and sisters, it will not happen because we want it to happen. It will not happen because we pray for it to happen. It will not happen because we hope it happens. Because we march to make it happen. Because we sat in or whatever other demonstration that we might do. It happens because the people go inward and purge themselves of ignorance and get rid of all the superstition, all the distrust, all the ignorance, and then infuse themselves with knowledge of self and a love for self and a love for each other. I have a caller. Let me get this caller. Good afternoon, caller.
Hey, Odio, what's happening, brother? How was your trip?
It was fantastic, Jay. It really was. It was an honor and a pleasure to be there, to meet brothers and sisters from around the world, and particularly, of course, from Africa and where majority African people are, and, you know, in Haiti and other those who identify, no matter what country they're in, identify with Africans, you know, from Panama and Colombia. Met some beautiful people from Colombia, you know, and it was fantastic. And to see how they're resisting in Venezuela, you know, because I saw that piece on Maduro, on Cueto, climbing a fence to get into, because I think he was supposed to have some position. I don't know what it was, but it was crazy. But he is out of the country. And, of course, the revolution is trying its best to maintain and to try to better the conditions for the Venezuelan people, all the Venezuelan people. You know, because they do have a lot of Venezuelan Africans there as well.
Did you get a chance to interact with the indigenous Venezuelan people?
No doubt, yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, some beautiful brothers and sisters. I mean, you know, it's tough when you can't, when you don't speak the language, you don't speak Spanish. And one thing that was interesting, everybody who spoke, with the exception of a couple, spoke in European language, because Spanish is European, you know. English, of course, is European. And that was those two languages were the most predominant. But there, you know, some one brother from Haiti did not speak in French. He spoke in Creole. One brother from Africa, he spoke Swahili, you know, intent. So I love that. They did not, because, you know, when you're constantly using the language of your oppressor, you know, sometimes it gives you an opinion on or an idea that may not be for you, because maybe you need to learn the language or speak the language of your people to be contrary to what the European is trying to make you do, or how he may, how he wants to make you think. And words do that. See, that's why I'm such a big advocate on looking at, you know, not using the word slave. You know, when you talk about us, not using the word black when you describe African people, you know. So that's why. Yeah.
You was, know, that's, you know, a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Be able to, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, there's, hey, brother, believe me, it was one of the best trips, and I've been fortunate to have a few trips, but one of the best ones that I've had, especially as in terms of a conference, in terms of something that is being done to help infuse people with knowledge and to go back to their countries and locales to do work, you know, at those levels to get other people to help and to be aware of what's going on. Because really the real thing with what's happening, because it's all about trying to influence public policy. There's not a damn thing they can do militarily to what the European has established, you know. But also, too, you know, Jay, a lot of times people say, well, you know, there's time. No, we don't have time. Time is being accelerated to a very fast pace. And each moment is necessary. I'm sorry, what'd you say, Jay?
In regards to our demise.
Yes, exactly. they trying to impose it 24/7, 365. And yet we go along like, you know, like tomorrow's promise. No, tomorrow's not promise.
I mean, just look at the reality of their behavior towards every sovereign country or nation with their desire to control and take away their wealth. And then they have the nerve to get mad when somebody come after their ass, like Russia,
right,
with this BS election.
Right.
I mean, the contradiction is staggering.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Nobody talks about it. Nobody...
I do.
Well, I know you do, but that, you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying,
but
man.
Nobody in the media
right
knows the contradiction.
Right.
And it just makes me sick when I see these Negro peas on television popping for these bastards.
Yeah.
Because I know what they do around the world. I know what with Bolton. I know what that dog Obama did around the world.
Yeah.
The drugs and all of that. And you want me to support and look up to a son of a bitch who would kill my brothers and sisters for no reason other than to take their resources? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just crazy. And when you hear black folks promote and get behind this madness, it just disgusts you, man.
Yeah. Well,
it really disgusts.
Well, when you see, when you're European trained, that's why when you're European trained, that's one of the Yenye Sasims I just read earlier, before as the program began. When you're European trained, that's how they shape your mind. You think in that way. It is hard to step outside the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed us in. It's very hard to do. It's hard to break that vice grip that they have on our minds. Because once you set the vice grip, you just can't pull it apart. You got to turn that handle.
They got you calming before you, Tom.
Say what?
They got you calming before you, Tom. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just mind-boggling, man.
It is. It really is.
It's so frustrating. You know, it was like I was saying on a post earlier today. With all of this love that they're giving to Kobe, unfortunately, you know, him and his daughter passed away in that tragic accident. Imagine if our people knew of and gave these same type of accolades for what Dr. Ben did, for what Dr. Clark did, for what some of our other scholars did and do. You know, maybe we would be in a better... We would understand concepts of what culture and family and all of the necessary things is that we need to understand about.
Right.
You know, it's like this weekend I was having a big argument with a friend of mine in regards to their grandkids. And, you know, sometimes when you tell people certain things, I know it hurts them because they don't want to accept the fact. But what I was trying to say to them was, if you know that your child is a functional illiterate, regardless whatever the circumstances are why he is a functional illiterate, and you know that he has a child with a woman that's a functional illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a functional illiterate, the responsibility to make sure that your grandchild don't become a functional illiterate. And people just don't understand that concept. I don't care if your child is a functional illiterate. The point is, you're responsible in a sense for them being a functional illiterate.
Yeah.
But it's your responsibility,
right,
understanding and knowing what your mistake may have been with the other child.
Right.
That was something you really did on purpose.
But see, Jay, you know, it's like this in that kind of society. You got to understand what we're in. If you don't understand that this society's intent is to demean, degrade, and basically ultimately eliminate you. So if you don't understand that, you know, there's movies, Jay, and I know you know this, that there's something that happens in that movie that sticks with you. It might be a quote. It might be a scene. It might be something that sticks with you, and you remember it. In the movie...
It's brainwashing.
Huh?
It's brainwashing.
Yeah, well, it sticks with you, but some of it is... a thought that it gives you to release your mind to get you to think. In the movie, Five Heartbeats. In the movie Five Heartbeats, Eddie, who would be like David Ruffin, he was like the lead singer, was excited about the fact that the group was going to go out and, you know, tour and so forth. And I remember in that portion of the movie, he came to his father. And of course, if you remember Eddie, he became a drug addict. You know, you know, in the movie, who later found Jesus. But anyway, when he went to his father, his father was upset because he said, you know, because all the while, unlike what you're saying, Jay, that even though I couldn't read, I want to make sure my children could read. I can't swim, but I made sure my daughters could swim, and my grandsons could swim. You know, even when I try to take swimming lessons, I don't know. I guess my replaced knees just kept weighing me down. I don't know. Might be a psychological phobia. But the point is, when he said to him, "You ain't shit because I ain't shit," hurt him when he went out. It stuck with him, and that caused him to not think positively about himself and what he was doing, and later to drug addiction. You see? And so a lot of times, what you were saying about it is the responsibility of a parent to make sure their child, yes, it is, logically. But unfortunately, because some parents ain't going to do no good, he ain't going to be here and get nothing, he ain't about nothing, you know, this, that is the intent of this system, to demean and to degrade and to denigrate African people at every damn turn, to constantly show you in a negative light. That is the intent.
Yeah, but you know, the deal is this though, OC. As we get older and we mature and we expand our vision of the world, we have to take responsibility to make certain things that didn't happen in the past don't happen in the future. And sometimes you just have to, you have to call it what it is, man. You know, if my kid can't function, I gotta make sure that his offspring function. It's my responsibility, man. You know, so, you know, if I say to you, you know, it's your responsibility to make sure your grandchild can read and write, because you know his parents can't, then, hey, if you're going to get upset about that, then you really got an issue. Because you're thinking about the problem, you're talking about the problem, so you must want to correct the problem, and this is what you have to do to correct the problem. It costs. See, now you got to pay for it, because you even got two options. Give them the necessary help, spend the money, or just let them go along. And as you know, they say, pray and wish for the best.
There it is. And that's what happens.
But look, let me let you.
All right, dear brother.
Continue on.
Yeah, I'm finna talk about Kobe. All right.
And I just want to enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, I'm going to talk.
I may chime in. Hotep.
Talk about Kobe Bryant. I've been a Los Angeles Laker fan pretty much all of my life. I was Elgin Baylor fan. Early 60s. When I was just like, I don't know, 10 years old. 9 years old. Loved Elgin Baylor. Elgin Baylor was a descendant player. A descendant player is an individual who takes the game to another level. Prior to Elgin Baylor, the NBA, you know, mostly Caucasians, you know, and they weren't fast, they weren't agile, and they didn't come with the moves that Elgin Baylor brought to the game. Elgin Baylor was a transcendent player. The way he moved, twist his body, hang time, faded back. And at 6'5", great leaper, rebounded well, passed well. Him and Jerry West, Zeke from Cabin Creek, very tough player. They had good teams, but they could never beat the Celtics. I remember I was going to D.C., and the All-Star game was in D.C. In fact, on the plane, I was going to D.C. for a firefighters meeting. On the plane was Ray Allen and Glenn, Big Dog Robinson, on their way to the All-Star game. And then on my way to pick up my luggage was Bill Russell, the great Bill Russell. I said, "Hey, Mr. Russell, how you doing, brother?" And I said, "You know, you could have let Elgin win one of them championships." He looked down on me, man, and laughed. He said, "Nope." Yeah. Especially 69. In 1969, when I thought that was going to be my year, because I fell in love with the Mets just that year. and they've been my team ever since. Because once I get a team, I'm not fair weather. If my team doesn't do good, they ain't doing good. When they do well, they doing well. I support them regardless. I take them as my team. And so they took over the Chicago Cubs in 69. And I followed that, you know, because that's really how I learned how to read the sports page. My first wife helped me learn how to read. I went all the way through school not learning how to read, really. And read the sports page. I read the box scores. Then I began to read editorials. And I began to read. It's just like in Islam, the only miracle in Islam was when Allah, God, told Prophet Muhammad to read, because reading is the most important thing that we can do as human beings. It broadens our vision, expands our horizons. It takes us places we may never go. Read. So I learned how to read and read the sports pages and so forth, you know. And so looking at the standings, the Mets were rising and the Cubs were falling, and they overtook the Cubs. And that was the first year they had divisions, East and West. In the East was the Mets. They took over. And in the West, although Atlanta is not in the West, Atlanta's in the Southeast, but Atlanta was in the West with Hank Aaron. And the Mets beat them. The Mets had some good pitching with Tom Seaver and Jerry Kuzman and Nolan Ryan. Nolan Ryan basically was a reliever before he became a starter and the strikeout king. So they beat the Braves and they played Baltimore, the Baltimore Orioles. Oh, they were tough. They were going to kill. They were going to kill the Mets. They had the big pitching of Cuellar and Dave McNally and so forth. Jim Palmer and Boog Powell. And the Mets won. There's a movie, Frequency. In that movie, it's the story of this guy when the Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights, are happening. He takes his shortwave radio and communicates with his son in the future. Got to check that out. But there's a scene in there that he uses from that Mets game to prove what he's saying, to defend himself. So check that movie out, Frequency. So anyway, the Mets won, and that was one. And then the Jets, and I love the Jets because of Joe Namath and the AFL. I was an AFL fan, even though I'm from Milwaukee, and they wanted to give Milwaukee an AFL franchise, but Vince Lombardi said no. The Packers are the state's team. In fact, they used to play four games in Milwaukee at Old Milwaukee County Stadium. But then, of course, as they renovated and, of course, TV, because games would be blacked out. You would have to have an antenna to see games. And so as those things progressed, all games are at Lambeau, and the millions of dollars they put into renovating Lambeau. And, of course, Lambeau's unique. The Packers situation is unique. They could have never awarded a little small town like Green Bay a franchise, an NFL franchise. And it is the only franchise that is publicly owned in the NFL. To me, all franchises should be publicly owned. That's just me again. And so I gravitated to the AFL. I loved the way they played, some of the teams and what they looked like. And, you know, more innovative, the Green Bay Packers, and the NFL was run, pass, punt, and a little bit more boring. And so I love Joe Namath, the white shoes, the whole bit. And so in 1969, they played. This is the 68th season in 1969, January 12th. January 12th of 1969. They beat the Baltimore Orioles. They were 17-point underdogs. So those two down. Now I got the Lakers and the Boston Celtics. I could have the trifecta. Man, I could have had the trifecta. All three of my teams winning the world championships, as they say, in one year. And the Lakers picked up Wilt Chamberlain, and now to go along with Jerry West and Elgin Baylor and all the other cast members, I knew they were going to win this year. And they lost in seven games. They lost at home in game seven. And that year, Bill Russell retired. He had been the player coach for like 3 years. He lost that 1 year to Philadelphia in 67. The Philadelphia team with Wilt, and a great team with Wilt, Luke Jackson, Chet Walker, Hal Greer, Wally Jones, Billy Cunningham, Matt Kuchar. But they didn't win the following year. The Boston Celtics were back there again. Bill Russell is the greatest winner of team sports history. 11 championships in 13 years. The greatest. Bill Russell, still living, you know. So, but I stayed a Laker fan. And finally, along with Wilt, Jerry West, they had 1972. They won 33 straight games. Still a team sports record. No team sports in hockey, baseball, basketball, or football have won 33, professional 33. Straight games. And of course they beat the New York Knicks 4-1. Following year the Knicks beat them, I think, 4-1 or 4-2. But that year, finally, my Lakers won the championship. And then some dry years, and then Kareem left Milwaukee and moved to LA, back home, and revived the Lakers. No, they didn't win right away. They won because of another young man who I admired in college at Michigan State. And I was so damn happy that he beat Larry Bird at Indiana State. I don't know what to do. Which was still the most watched NCAA college game championship in history. Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. And, of course, I mean, Larry Bird understood the dynamics. He was hailed. He was a white savior. In fact, the NBA was in a tough situation because of drugs and other things. Even the playoff games were in tape delay. They weren't live. And they had other issues. But when Magic and Bird entered the NBA, it changed that dynamic, along with David Stern, who passed last year. December of last year, David Stern passed, and he grew the NBA using Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. Magic came out right off the jump. Bird, he was right there too, because he won the championship the following year. It was Magic and Bird going off, changing championships. But his rookie year, he beat the Philadelphia 76ers and the Doctor. And I know in 82, the Doctor came back and they swept him, you know. But, yeah. And then, of course, if you're a Laker fan, like I'm a Laker fan, there is one championship that is greater than all championships. 1985, they were finally able to beat the Boston Celtics at home. During the Magic and Kareem years, they beat Boston twice. They beat them twice, 2 out of 3. So I was, man, happy. Then they drafted this cat named Kobe Bryant. Well, they didn't draft him. Charlotte drafted him, Charlotte Hornets. But they traded him on draft day to the Los Angeles Lakers, where he wanted to play, where he wanted to be. Well, his first 2 years, not so much. Remember, if you've been listening, because you can't help it, because it's on everything, and they talk about, you know, how Kobe, you know, how his career had gone, where he shot up to 2 air balls against the Jazz, you know, and then as the saying goes, he left that game and went right to the gym. Never again. Kobe's desire, and his will, his determination. Michael was his idol. Michael was his mirror. He wanted to, as the commercials go, be like Mike. That's why he's not a transcendent player. The transcendent players are Elgin Baylor. After Elgin Baylor became the doctor, the doctor was a transcendent player. He took the game to another level. The doctor was something else. Some of these names that I'm mentioning, go to YouTube, put those names in. There's a lot of footage on these people, a lot of it. The doctor was fantastic. Outstanding documentary that played on NBA TV last year and year before consistently was about the doctor. How he was at, I mean, he's at the Rucker in New York and there's people in trees, people on roofs to see the doctor, you know? And, you know, he gets fly in the air. Actually, to be honest with you, before the doctor, as a transcendent player, I want to throw Connie Hawkins in. So Elgin, Connie Hawkins, then the doctor. Because Connie Hawkins had big hands, sweeping hands, moves, very flexible, dunk on you. I mean, Connie Hawkins. In fact, he had to play for the Globetrotters because there was some issue back when he was in school. So he played for the Globetrotters, and finally he was able to get an NBA through Phoenix, the Phoenix Suns. He even played for the Lakers for a minute. But the doctor, because they merged the NBA and the ABA, and the doctor, instead of being with the New York Nets, even though the Nets came in, he went to Philadelphia. Supposed to have gone to Milwaukee. Maybe Kareem would have stayed. Who knows? But the doctor was a transcendent player. After the doctor, Michael. Michael's the transcendent player. Kobe is not a transcendent player. Kobe is a mirror of Michael. Kobe is a mirror of Michael. Both with that same determination. Both outstanding scorers. Outstanding defensive players. Kobe, as a Laker, and you know, of course, I love the Lakers. When Shaq went there, and it wasn't Kobe and Shaq, it was Phil Jackson. When Phil Jackson went there, it changed. It changed with Kobe and Shaq, and they became a dynamic team. And they won three straight. And then Kobe told him, man, you got to get in shape, dude. And so a big rift between Kobe and Shaq happened. And Shaq left. Because Jerry Buss understood that, do I keep Shaq and pay him that kind of money? Who's, you know, not getting in shape and really is not. Or do I keep Kobe, who's younger and more fire? The right move was made. He kept Kobe. And then Kobe teamed with a group of players, Paul Gasol, Robert Horry. I hate when they call him Big Shot Bob. No, Big Shot Rob, Robert Horry. They never called him Bob Horry when he played with Houston and won those championships. When he, after the Lakers, he played with San Antonio. He had seven championships. Big Shot Rob, Robert Horry. B. Shaw, man, I tell you, listening to Brian Shaw, listening to B. Shaw last night on NBA TV. Tough. This whole thing is really tough. Now, understand this, brothers and sisters, because I know I'm about to go off. I will say this to you. This is Brother Oshie. I've always said, I would give up those teams that I mentioned, the Jets, the Mets, the Lakers, and sports, period. Give all of that up. If that means that African people would be liberated, self-determining, and sovereign. Give it all up. Not a damn thing about sports. It's just sports. It's not life. I would give all that up because what's most important for African people is that we live independently. We live self-determiningly. We live being liberated, and we live being sovereign. But that's not the case at the moment. And at this very moment, a young man, 41 years old, still in the prime of his life and could do great things. Because no doubt he is one of the top players in the history of the National Basketball Association. Let me get to another transitive player before we go off the air. We'll have to go off very soon. And that is LeBron James. LeBron James, after Michael, is the next transcendent player. Because Kobe and Jordan mirrored, LeBron James is a, and now because of this situation, I believe my Lakers with LeBron James and Anthony Davis and whatever supporting cast, they're going to win the championship this year for Kobe. You heard it here first. LeBron James is the next transcendent player. Could the next transcendent player be Zion Williamson? Only time will tell. But the transcendent player, he is big, he is strong, he is fast, he is agile, mobile, hostile. The transcendent player can shoot from all over the court, can go inside, has great vision. Yes, I know I'm, you, as you hear me, you can say, Brother Osh, that sounds like LeBron James. Yes, but it's going to be at a higher level. Probably be a better free throw shooter. Probably be a better shooter from the three-point line. Probably be a better player from the inside. Maybe that could be Zion. Who knows? Or maybe that player right now is, you know, looking at all of this. And the death of Kobe Bean Bryant and his daughter, Gianna Maria Gigi Bryant. I know my daughter, she said, I know that when she was there and playing, and that helicopter was going down, and you knew it was going to be certain death, that they clung to each other. They grabbed each other tight. And I know you probably seen the helicopter go down and explode. It's been all over the internet. That they were immediately incinerated. You should live each day like you're going to live forever. You should also live each day like it's going to be your last. The sayings of Prophet Muhammad in Islam, the Hadith. Whatever that day is, when you wake up, be thankful, be grateful. Whatever it is you're supposed to do, do it. Be thankful. Live each day like you're going to live forever. Also, live each day like it's going to be your last. Let it be fulfilling. Brothers and sisters, we in this program, like we in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants. Think they can't do it out, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we shall and we will be victorious. Bibi Fahodia. Hope you can join me on Wednesday. Peace, family.